You're sending us a warning.
Maybe something bad's about to happen.
You said we can change things, right? Everything happened for a reason.
We obviously have no control over what's happening.
We're all in this.
I'm just trying to make sure you're okay.
Do I look okay?
Help!
We're all friends, and we just need to trust that it's gonna be okay.
Welcome to the 13th episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, eventually every zero issue. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
And in this episode, we take a look at Acronym Legion number 69 and 70 and Outsiders number 11. And Bass, we've talked about the Legion before on First Strike, the Invasion podcast. I mean, it was a sequel to, it grew out of Invasion.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to take a whole lot of time, you know, covering again what our backgrounds are with Acronym Legion. You'll just have to find the appropriate episode of First Strike, the Invasion podcast if you really want to know.
Take a pause now. Go get it. Go listen to that and come back.
Or don't. And now, anyway, we're looking at the end of that series rather than the beginning, or at least the end of it as a title before it gets rebranded in 0 month. So where was Legion in 1994? I think I'll just let the synopsis speak for itself. So it's Legion 94, number 69 and 70, by Tom Pyre, Arne Jorgensen, and Jamie Pasco, with extra pencils by Derek Auquin in number 70, the cover of which is by the original Legion artist, Barry Kitson. In issue 69, minutes to go, Strata isn't getting much traction with her wedding announcement, but then Legion is kind of preoccupied. What with Vrildox's and Stealth's genius baby Luraldox making a power grab, brainwashing half the team, and committing genocide. Lady Quark, coming down from her brainwashing attacks, Vrildox, thinking it was him, causing Dox to strip his son's authority, only he's too late. Where this connects with Zero Hour is that Jonah, formerly Ultra Boy, now Emerald Dragon, has come back in time to rescue FaZe, who he thinks is Phantom Girl. Well, so did we, frankly. But here he recognizes her as not Tina Wazo, but Enya Wazo. Her lookalike cousin. In the double-sized issue number 70, Down to Zero, Dox finds the fresh corpse of the man he killed to get the resources needed to create Legion. It's a time anomaly, and Dox deduces time is coming apart. Meanwhile, Lady Quark is exposed as the parasite creature that killed Captain Comet, and he is avenged. Strata and Garv get married, few people attend, and Lobo's just there for the party. Dox finds he can't do anything about time because Lurl has grabbed power. Joe has taken Enya back to the 30th century, but then she shows up to help Stealth escape her son's forces. She phased out of the time machine at the last second, unable to let her team down in the moment of crisis. Stealth and FaZe get the wedding party to help free Dox from Lurl, who has quite publicly framed his father for the genocide as a pretext to take over Legion. The heroes grab the brainwashed telepath and race for a ship that has fallen out of a time warp. They escape to become fugitives, though Garv is left behind. Continued next month in Acronym Rebels 94, number 0. So a big sea change for the Legion.
Yep.
But first, let's talk about those covers, and then we can talk about the story afterwards.
Sure.
The first one is by the regular artist, Jorgensen, and it has FaZe and Emerald Dragon kissing. And then the second one has Vrildox being dragged in chains by Legion personnel as, you know, the characters we know look on. So what did you think of these covers as the end of a series?
The cover of number 69 is, I think, pretty appropriate. It's a kiss goodbye. Mm. I mean, it's also a very familiar type of picture, I guess. You know, it kind of looks, if you're so inclined, kind of looks like if FaZe was taking a selfie of her kissing, you know, Emerald Dragon in this case. It's nice. It's soft. It's okay.
But romantic.
Yeah, but it doesn't really do justice to the story inside the book, though.
This was something that for Legion readers, we were waiting for this.
Okay.
In a way, because from our perspective, Glorith flips places for, you know, there's like the Durlan that was in the Legion originally is switched, disappears, and there appears Faze, who we think must be, has to be, Phantom Girl, because she's taken out of the continuity the other end, and then this Durlin becomes RJ Brand in our continuity, so there's like, you know, time travel stuff. So we have no reason not to believe that this is Tinha Wazzo. She's gone from the Legion books in the future, and here she appears in the past in the Acronym Legion. But she's amnesiac. So she doesn't know where she comes from. She doesn't know she's Tinha Wazzo. So she doesn't have like foreknowledge of the future or anything. Fine. But then here they decide, no, she's not Phantom Girl. We don't want her to be Phantom Girl anymore because we want to keep Faze in the book. Especially since the Legion books are going to reboot entirely.
Yeah.
So why should we lose a character that is beloved in the Legion 94 book or Rebels or whatever it's going to be? Why mm-hmm. should we lose that character when the Legion's going to just be erased anyway? So
yeah.
In here, look at the cover. It says Faze and Joe together at last. And it says Faze, not Tinha. And it says Joe, not Ultra Boy or whatever, Emerald Dragon yeah. or anything. So it is Joe. It is not Tinha. We've been waiting for this reunion to happen or for Tinha to regain her memories or for Phantom Girl to return to her continuity or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just not going to happen.
We discover here, right? We discover here that she's not Tinha.
Yes. And then we're going to discover she is. Because this is the screwed up thing, okay?
So this crossover, this event, this crisis is all about just basically lying. they're just going, oh, this is the character. It's not the character. Maybe it's the character. Is it the character?
Continuity is going to change, right? So
yeah.
After 0 hour, when time is all eaten up and then we get a new continuity or very close to the original, but there are differences, especially in the Legion's future. It's going to be an entirely different Legion, a younger Legion just starting up. And we're going to have a Tinha Wazzo called Apparition instead of Phantom Girl. Apparition's going to be in there.
Okay.
So in a way, they're sort of setting that up where they're saying, well, she can't be Tinha. She has to be Enya. Because, you know, we're going to reboot that whole property anyway. But then part of the Legion comes to the 20th century in a storyline for a good while. They're like a year or something, 6 months to a year. Half the Legion is in the 20th century during the whole Final Night event and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
In that storyline, they have Faze and Apparition meet. And now it's the question is, well, okay, well, is she a cousin? Is she still the cousin, Enya? What is her relationship to all that? Now that Glorith is no longer a concern. It's like, who sent her back in time if Glorith isn't really a thing anymore?
Okay. Well, there's a lot to unpack. That's what you're saying.
So what happens then is that they re-retcon it. And then they say, they decide that Apparition, Tinha, had a Kargite father. So she's from Big Tizzle, the Faze dimension.
Okay.
But her father was not a Big Tizzillian. He was a Kargite. And the Kargites are the people of Triplicate Girl, Triad, okay. or Duo Damsel, or whatever else she became. They are people like that split into threes. So she had both powers. She can phase and split into three. But her father was a scoundrel who had like big gambling debts, and he sold off one of the babies to the Luck Lords, who ran casinos and whatnot. And somehow, in some event, that version of Tinha was sent back in time and became Faze. The third baby, we have no idea. And there was another reboot before we ever found out what happened to the third baby. But then Tinha, who thought she was a single baby, meets her twin and they remerge. And that restores something that, you know, Phantom Girl at that point is sort of a ghost. She seemed to have died, but so maybe there's like one of the babies is the dead body, and then I don't know. I read these comics like fairly recently, so they remerge, and also Faze is out of the Legion, the Acronym Legion, which in any case was sort of collapsing, or you know, Rebels was either dead or dying.
Okay,
can't remember the exact when the series actually ended, so they don't need Faze in the 20th century anymore. So they merge her with Apparition, and now she can split into twins if she wanted, but rarely ever does. And then you go back to to their present day, which is the 30th century. Got okay. all that?
Well, I was taking notes. It really feels like somebody got into a room and said, okay, we can't do this because this doesn't work. How do we fix it? And they fixed it.
This is exactly every time you crisis up something and say, oh, we're going to fix all the continuity. You know, Crisis on Infinite Earths caused continuity problems. Yeah. 0 Hour is supposed to fix those problems. Obviously, it created more.
There's a lot.
You know, there is a real thing here at DC where they are continuity obsessed. And I think a lot of the comics are sort of, you know, the reason the line keeps collapsing in on itself, whether it's the New 52 or then Rebirth, then now again, it's all falling apart. And the reason is editorial and writers are much too focused on continuity and trying to fix all these little bugs. And then it just makes it more confusing.
Well, yeah. You're adding ingredients to something that has too many ingredients.
Every time you reboot the Legion, you kind of screw up a lot of past continuity because they're not in their own little bubble. They have interacted with the past and keep doing so. So this is one example, and it's not like the crazy rant I went on about Mon-El or Valor when we discussed that book in First Strike, but it's kind of part of that overall problem. We're talking about the covers, we're talking about Phase, but what did you think of these final chapters, you know, in general?
Well, I don't know much about Legion. I know you dig it. You liked it quite a bit. There are some things in there that I really do like and was kind of before its time, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you mean Strata and Garv?
Strata and Garv.
I think that was always like a nice, you know, romantic relationship where the female's body type is not at all like, you know, when we first meet Strata, she's like block. She's, you know, she's gray stone. And then the stone cracks and there's a crystal underneath and they go, it's a girl. You know, it's like eventually Dryadians show their sex.
It's kind of a nice thing because it's not a traditional way of presenting. And so I really dug it. I was like, yeah, this is cool. This is cool. This was for 94. This was way before its time.
And I really like the wedding ceremony because I thought civil unions were kind of septic a little bit. Yeah. You know, I've mocked some civil ceremonies because it always felt like what the Justice of the Peace would say kind of sounded like, do you swear that you have no blood relations? You know, it felt very robotic to me. And then it felt anti-romantic.
And in this case, it actually is robotic.
Yes, it's a robot pastor or something. I need to read it.
Well, I mean, it's great. They're updated.
The robot says, your files are hereby updated to reflect your permanent reclassification as a familial unit. Commencing tick, tick, tick now. There's like, you have like 3 seconds to pull out of it. Basically their civil classification has gone from single to married, and that's the entire thing basically.
Oh yeah,
with Lobo looking on.
Oh, he's not impressed.
It must be pretty hard to just jump into this.
Oh well, yeah, if you really want to know everything about every character as if you read the whole thing, I mean, you have to go back and look at who were Legion back then. Who are these characters? What are their names? What's their relationship to one another, et cetera, et cetera. So just jumping into Legion at the first three books or the first two books during our last series. And now just jumping to the end, it's quite of a job. I mean, I had to do a little bit of research and to enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah. So did I. I've read this. So I had more of a sense of who people were, but there's a lot of like the later members. They're not people I would be able to name necessarily off the cuff. I did remember fondly the whole Lurl Dox thing because, I guess he's Brainiac 3.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, if you will, because Lurl Dox is the son of Brainiac the villain. And he has like quite the Oedipus complex in this.
Oh, my.
You know, he doesn't want his mother harmed. It's too bad that she's siding with the heroes because he's a genocidal monster. And he, of course, he wants his dad to be killed. What was always fun about Lurl Dox as this villain. And he stays a villain for a long time. He's, you know, even in the, I think, the Rebels revival, he was still a villain.
He doesn't look like a kid who's going to be nice.
No. And what's funny about it is that he's an infant. So you've got, you know, he's just sitting in his little baby chair and issuing orders. He's just like a super genius Kaluan. It's funny. And so he can't really handle, I think, is the thing, is as a baby, he can't process ethics, and he doesn't have like that experience.
No, he's very smart, but he has zero experience in everything.
He just wants. He's a baby. Yeah. He wants things. It's just tantrums until he gets the thing he wants. And what, as a super genius, he wants control of Legion. He hates his dad and he loves his mom. And I mean, that's just baby impulses. I think he makes like a pretty great and crazy kind of kooky villain. I understand why some of this is sort of opaque. It was opaque to me, is because they're going to change the book. The whole status quo is going to change from the acronym Legion being this police force to being a fascist organization controlled by a villain. And the people we've been following are going to be on the run. They're going to be fugitives. They're going to be rebels. Because we need to change all of that, is there a new era for the book, for the franchise? We need to tie everything up. We need to tie up the whole who is FaZe. That's the only reason Jonah came back in time with the founder legionnaires to take part in Zero Hour, was to do this little side trip. We need to resolve that thing with Lady Quark that I don't remember at all, where she supposedly killed Captain Comet. And she was DNA replicant parasite thing. I don't even know Mara Jin or whatever her name is, who kills her. I don't even remember that character. So there's a lot going on. And even we even need to do, like, the 70th issue has to be double-sized with two artists to cover the, it feels like we need to sync up with Zero Hour, with Zero Month. So we need to end these storylines now. You also need to set up things. So you need to set up who actually escapes, who will become the core Rebels team. That's why they escape with Telepath. I guess suddenly they went, we really like Telepath. We want him to be in the new team, but he's been brainwashed. So let's just kidnap that single character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, set up how Garv and Strata, even though they've just been married, are going to be separated. It's like the classic lovers on two sides of the front or whatever kind of story that they've set up. So a lot of things are happening because we're ending a series and we're starting another.
I can imagine that it was important back in the 90s before everything. But, you know, nowadays it could be just short stories on the internet. You know, if you want to know who FaZe was, well, too bad we're ending this story. But here's a 3-issue internet e-comic about FaZe, and now you know. You don't have to end everything in one book, in theory.
Even so, they don't do that much, do they? Like, fill in gaps for, like, TV series. I've seen that in digital comics.
Yeah.
But their business is selling magazines. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and in 94, obviously. I mean, that's one of the problems with a lot of modern comics, is that you need to read this, and then you have to go and read that, and you have to go and read this, and it's, like, all out of order in different books, and I think that is a problem. So,
well, that's why we're here.
Well, something like Legion, which was kind of in its own little box, you know, not on Earth, not necessarily participating in the same way with other books. Like, somebody reading Zero Hour didn't need to read this. Very slim in terms of time anomalies.
Yeah, very, very slim. Really has nothing to do with with Zero Hour, really.
I mean, what they basically did was use Jonah's appearance in the event to explain the FaZe thing. It's less about the time anomalies. We do have them, but whatever. And, you know, the team could have found a completely different ship. It didn't need to be that strange ship or anything. So, you know, it is, and it's in a little box. So you want things to be resolved in that box. To me, you need to I didn't expect them to explain FaZe. Like, they explained her away. We all thought she was Phantom Girl, and now she isn't? And you're just asking yourself, like, well, why? You have this big reunion with the power couple that is Ultra Boy and Phantom Girl. They are reunited, and it's like, oh, no, sorry, I thought you were her. So did we for the last 6 years, you know?
How bittersweet.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just because there's, like, this upheaval. Why not make her Phantom Girl after all? Why not have her stay behind? And then there's, like, two Phantom Girls, and guess what? that's kind of what they accepted it was after the reboot. Mm-hmm. So as you'll see, in we're going to talk about Outsiders next. And I think the thing that they have in common is that they both used Zero Hour less as time anomalies driving the plot and more as a way to resolve things before rearranging the furniture and moving on to another phase of their story. Outsiders does that too. And we'll talk about that just after the next promo break.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
The Legion of Superheroes through the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Baxter series, 5 years later, the reboot, the three-boot, the retro-boot, the animated series. We have banded together as the Legion of Super Bloggers to cover it all. Seek us out at legionofsuperbloggers.blogspot.com.
Always have to say it that way.
Haven't you ever heard of a little thing called showmanship?
Okay, we're talking about The Outsiders.
Oh man, this is great. This is great. This is I exactly know how you feel now when I get to read some Hawkman stuff. You're not really fond of The Outsiders.
My own mostly satirical feelings, they're mostly satirical about the team, are well known. It's an inside joke on the network. And I'll talk about how that happened.
You probably bought this book. I mean, the cover has the death of the Outsiders on it. So you had to, you have this.
I did not.
You didn't frame this book?
No. I don't even remember this book from that time.
Oh, I am so finding this and framing it for you.
I certainly did not read that volume of, actually, it's not even The Outsiders. The book was just called Outsiders. But did you have any history with this team?
I just know a couple of them. I know Geo-Force. I was surprised, we open up with the Eradicator, which is like a kind of a weird surprise. You know, I was kind of surprised to see the Outsiders, or just Outsiders, being a bigger team, and the plot and the thing with the vampires and everything. I mean, that's very Outsiders, right?
Is it?
Well, I kind of see the Outsiders, or Outsiders in this case. I'm going to say that all the time. I kind of see the Outsiders like the Marvel's Defenders. Well, Defenders on TV are. They're street level.
No, they're not. No, because Geo-Force is like super powerful and...
Yeah, I guess they're not.
Because the Outsiders are... This is the problem with the Outsiders. The concept. The concept. like I said, you know... People know that I don't like the Outsiders, or at least I say that more or less jokingly, much in the same way that I believe that you do about Hawkman.
Yeah, yeah. I just fuel that little thing.
The reason people think that, say that, and are probably right, is that I did a pretty long series of comedy posts on Siskoid's blog of geekery, taking the original Batman and the Outsiders series, page by page, panel by panel, and mocking every part of it. Until issue about 15.
You know what? That series is beautiful. People should go read it on your comic blog, because it's great. And yes, it is satirical. It's just funnies for being funnies.
Yeah. I make fun of Jim Aparo. You know, it's very often it's unfair, except even though I was, you know, pouring it on thick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My feelings aren't that strong, really, truly. But with all due respect to my friends Tim Price and Ashford Wright, who just started a loving, nostalgic, rose-colored glasses podcast about the book, I do still think that the team was ill-conceived. Batman's reasons for leaving the JLA at the time felt contrived. And then the team is just a rough assembly of people who sort of showed up in Markovia on the same day by coincidence. Only Black Lightning was actively recruited. And then the other ones just show up in this speck of a country for different reasons, and thin reasons very often. And then they just decided to stay together. And all they did really was get beat up by some mort every month so Batman could tell them they suck. That, like the first year or two of the book, until Batman left,
that was pretty much it.
Yeah. So the pre-existing characters on the team were cool. Black Lightning, Metamorpho, Batman, of course. That's fine. But the new ones were like these role-playing game characters drawn up on a napkin. And sometimes you have to wait, like, I think Halo, it took 18 months before they gave her a backstory, an origin.
Oh, my.
18 months. So she was just like this strange cipher and very badly written. Like she had amnesia, which is the reason she couldn't talk about her origins. But it's like she didn't know what eating was.
Oh my God. And she.
So there was a lot of, like, I would say bad writing. It was very cookie cutter superhero stuff. And the characters were cookie cutter. I mean, you've had stuff like Katana. Oh, she's a cool sword, you know, katana wielding babe with a soul sucking sword. But it's too violent for the comics of the day or something. So she's always like slapping people with the flat of the blade.
Yeah, she's a samurai that can't cut use people. The blade, really.
So it was like, oh my God, this is so badly conceived, never mind Geoforce. Or the fact that they were called outsiders when none of them were, like, they were all privileged dicks who did not feel like outsiders in any, you know, possible way. So, sorry, Mike Barr, he's done good work. But Outsiders was just dreck. And I know a lot of people still love it. And I do feel like that's totally your nostalgia talking. It's like that movie from when you were a kid, and then you watch it back when you're an adult, and you go, oof.
Yeah, yeah. That happens quite a lot.
So to me, that's what The Outsiders was. Now, where were The Outsiders in 1994?
Good question.
Well, we're on the first year of Outsiders Volume 3, technically. Technically, it's Volume 2, but Batman and the Outsiders was the first one. The Outsiders was the second one. And then this is Outsiders. And Mike Barr is still writing them. Now, they've been on hiatus for about 6 years. The team disbanded around Millennium. This is why we didn't cover it in Invasion at all. So this revival, which would last 25 issues, big success, started with Geoforce reforming the team with some old and some new members to fight vampires in his home country. There are new members, including the magician Faust, son of Felix. There's the war suit wearing engineer and industrialist Technocrat, and the super strong werebear Wild. Looker gets killed, but is actually turned into a vampire in the thrall of vampire prince Roderick. We'll see her here. Halo is later killed, but her spirit inhabits the body of Technocrat's dead wife. Katana's still around.
Just being Katana.
Yes, in a more terrible costume. And at this point, Eradicator's joined the team, as you mentioned. As has a super speedster with tornado powers called Dervish, who, if you look on the DC Wiki, there's no information on her, basically. It's like, this is how cool she was. To me, this is all more role-playing game character sheets.
Really feels like that. It really feels like everybody drew up their own character, and now we're putting them in adventures.
They're so cookie cutter. Again, this is cookie cutter superhero stuff only 10, 12 years later from the point of view of the original Batman and the Outsiders. And we picked things up in this. This is like the sequel to the vampire storyline. We're back to that and reveal that, you know, Looker is still, still alive, undead, but still around. Let's say it that way. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do the synopsis. Let's do the synopsis, and then we can get into how good or bad it is. Outsiders number 11 by Mike W. Barr, Paul Pelletier, and Robert Campanella. It's called Final Blood Part 2. Half of the team is feigning being captured. I don't know why they're feigning, but they're feigning being captured in the vampire-controlled country of Abyssia, where the population is being used as a blood bank by Prince Roderick and his vampire bride, Looker. The rest of the team has come to rescue them and fight the vampires, but they also get jumped by the Atomic Knight, who's been tracking them for the murder of the Markovian Queen, who was actually killed by vampires, I guess, in the first issues. Looker seems to be playing both sides and tells the captive outsiders they can stop faking and join the fight, except she almost immediately turns on them, I guess under the charismatic control of Roderick. Halo tries to stab her in the heart, but her powers allow her to survive. Then the time anomalies hit, and it's like a bunch of portals that show you things from the past and offer to resolve your subplots for you, maybe. Dervish and Looker could rejoin their dead husbands, but they don't. Halo wants to re-become her former self, but Katana holds her back because who knows what would actually happen. Atomic Knight witnesses the actual murder of the queen and records it. You know, those images wind up on the news later. Nice little snuff film. And Roderick is made human, so Geoforce executes him with extreme prejudice. This is kind of his shtick, because in the very first story of The Outsiders, he throws Baron Bedlam off the castle ramparts. So he's the killer of the bunch. There's also this other plot line I know nothing about, with some ugly vampire princess and a pair of twins. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. Faust kills her and frees them. Fine. Later, back in Gotham, everybody bickers and the team breaks up. But again, they're setting up for Outsiders number zero and a new era of the team where there will be actually two different teams of Outsiders built around these characters.
Okay.
Again, we're sort of on the sidelines of Zero Hour. Zero Hour isn't very important. I don't feel like those anomalies are explained very well, what they can do or how they can be used, how Roderick becomes human at this point. None of that really is explained. But in any case, it's just about rearranging the furniture and from this point on having a different status quo.
Yeah.
Cover? You like the cover. You wanted to frame the cover. Tell us about the cover.
Well, I wanted to frame it for, you know, a gift for you. We have Prince Roderick on there and just ripped costumes from some of the heroes, some of the key heroes, you know, Geo-Force and Katana. And we have these vampire
wolves.
They're just foaming at the mouth. They just want to dig in. So it's very sinister. It's very, very sinister. And it has this big, huge wave of bats in the background, which is a nice little, I guess, a little wink to maybe Batman. Because, you know, he was part of the Outsiders. He created them. I was like, ooh, this is such a great thing. It's very dramatic. What's his name again? Roderick?
Roderick.
Prince Roderick. Prince Roderick has the worst open shirt costume I've ever seen. And at least he's hairy. I mean, at least he has this thing going on. It's very Halloween. I don't know. I really dig it. I'm enjoying this thing.
Paul Pelletier has sort of sometimes he's not so extreme. He's not 90s too extreme. Sometimes he seems to be channeling like Alan Davis, who was, you know, for a while, the Outsiders artist. Like, the Outsiders always got, like, these very good artists, I felt, for the quality of the writing. It's like, oh, well, you want to read some Outsiders because it's Jim Aparo, because it's Alan Davis. And it's like, oh, my God, why are you guys slumming on this? But the real, like, one of the things that Paul Pelletier, I don't know if I want to blame him. I don't know if he originated these new looks, but I guess so, because he was artist on the series. The costumes, you know, you're mocking Prince Roderick here, but everybody. It's so generic.
I don't even mention it because the superheroes in the 90s, they were obsessed with team looks that just didn't work. They were obsessed with chains and spikes and
pouches and belts.
Yeah. And belts for your leg. I mean, does your leg really need a belt?
But I'm not saying like somebody like Looker had a good look to begin with, you know, with the bows. And
No.
So here, it's actually just like that pink jacket. Is much better, sure, but it's very generic. And it's like the Atomic Knight once had a cool look, but now he's just random generic dude in armor. And and so is Technocrat. Technocrat is also in a generic suit of armor. And then Faust doesn't really have a costume. He's like Looker. He's, you know, like kind of t-shirt wearing kind of hero. Halo is as generic as she's ever been. She's never been this generic.
Yeah, I think the feeling back then was getting away from the superhero costume.
I just feel like this is so not memorable. Like even Eradicator, that's not Paul Pelletier's fault. Eradicator had this look in the miniseries or when he sort of, after the death of Superman, he sort of became merged with some other guy. And that was the costume. And it feels like, well, it's basically the costume he had, but remove the S.
Remove the S and take off the cape.
Yeah,
and
take away the Superman-ness.
The goggles.
Yeah, you're in this halfway costume. Then you should, from that, morph into something that is your identity. But it's so nothing. It's nothing.
It's like every character is computer-generated random character. They have no spice. They're bland.
They're basically bland. And even the characters, like the better ones, I guess the more colorful ones, are the ones that pre-existing Outsiders. Yeah. So Geo-Force and Katana, but they've changed their costume. I think Katana's costume looks stupid. And with the rising sun kind of thing, it's just like they've unbulked her and she looks less like a samurai and more like she's doing yoga. And then you've got Geo-Force. They haven't changed it a lot. But the fact that they made the logo in the middle red just makes him look like he's got a target on his, like even more than ever. It was always kind of a crosshairs kind of design for no reason. But now it's a target that he's got in the middle of his chest. Shoot me, please. Shoot me, he's asking. This is all very problematic to me because it feels like I will never love the Outsiders. I always think they're stupid. And when you remake them, rebrand them this way, it's not helping.
No, it's just putting stupid in another suit. I mean, it's not taking away the
and
stupid.
And it's at a point where there are scenes here, like when they're looking at the time anomalies and there's like this pink light and you're seeing people from the back and I'm trying to decipher whose hairstyle is that. I don't even know who's talking because the costumes are all look the same. The hairstyles all look the same. You can't see the colors because there's like this glow. I guess it's supposed to be Looker and Roderick, and I don't know which is which, you know? And that's like a guy and a girl. I just had like problems with the design of the comic. It's, you know?
Ugh. Yeah.
I mean, what else could I say? Here's the thing that this is the kind of stuff that I would laugh at on the blog, right?
Yeah.
It's just like this, like dumb writing, written in 20 minutes kind of stuff. It's Kitana. When they escape, you know, GeoForce can just rip the chains off the wall. He's super strong. They turn to Kitana, and she's already free. And they go, how? And she says, I'm a samurai. Okay, Mike Barr, picking locks in escapology is not a samurai thing. It is not.
It's not
a ninja thing. It's a yakuza thing, maybe. It is not a samurai thing. I am a samurai. That is not an explanation for what just happened.
It's not, but she's very cute while
very
saying
cute,
it.
Very cute, very Alan Davis-y in that shot. It is the kind of brain dead dialogue that I laughed at a lot in the original series.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying Mike Barr hasn't written some very good things, some Batman, some some mystery stories, the Maze Agency, but Outsiders, it's like, feels like, you know, just like thrown away and contrived. And it feels like this is, it's not just him. It's like the coloring is when Wild turns into a bear, his head is colored like the wolves instead of his own.
Yeah. That was kind of man. I don't really know Wild with the Y. I really didn't know he transformed. So I thought he was transforming into this superpowered vampire.
Yeah. It's like I read up beforehand. I'm looking at the issue and I'm going to Wikipedias and trying to figure out who the characters are. And Wild, it's like he was turned into a bear by Faust and then stuff like that. I think his ultimate fate is that he winds up in a zoo as an actual bear. So, okay. But then through the beginning of the issue, he's not in bear form. He's just like this red, superhuman, super beef, almost synthetic looking character. That doesn't look like a bear. And then he turns into a bear later. I don't understand the mechanics of it. So jumping into this, it's like, yes, you're rearranging the furniture. You're using the event to change things. But for anyone who is collecting Zero Hour and maybe thinking, oh, Outsiders, I haven't really picked this up yet. Maybe Zero Hour, the crossover issue, the tie-in issue, will sell me on it. This is even worse than the Legion issues as far as what the hell's going on. And I feel like at the end, when they all break up, it's very contrived. It's just like, well, zero issue coming up. We're, you know, we're changing everything. It's like, well, everybody just bickers and everybody's after Halo. Everybody loves Halo for different reasons. I love the Halo that is inside. I love the Halo's body. I love the Halo. Oh, my God. It's like
nobody said they liked Halo's costume.
No, nobody. I mean, which looks a lot like Apparitions in the reboot Legion, which is yet to come. But I think she already had that costume in the SW6 Legion. Anyway. I know that is not very original. These are just arguments that you would have. It would not break up the team normally. It just happens. And you get like that breaking glass effect at the end.
It's not just bickering. It's super bickering. So that's why.
To me, this is a contrived soap opera kind of thing, which was very 80s for sure. I mean, when they started The Outsiders, it felt a lot like, well, we're having success with the Teen Titans because the Teen Titans or the New Titans are sort of emulating the X-Men formula, which is really hot right now. There was a let's do more teams. Let's do more teams that have angst and that have conflict and that have soap opera attached to it. I think Outsiders was part of that. Infinity Inc. was another one. And they were all trying to capture that X-Men vibe in a way that like the Justice League just couldn't. Justice League just wasn't like that. I felt like Outsiders was born out of that. You can't out Claremont Chris Claremont. It's just and even the old X-Men comics eventually collapsed in on themselves. Like the angst and the the sort of the storylines that would the sort of strife and drama of it. Eventually, mm-hmm. that couldn't be sustained. Eventually, that wasn't so good anymore. At this point, it's old hat, and I feel like we should move on. And here's Mike Barr trying to, I don't know, recapture what was great about The Outsiders when nothing was great about The Outsiders. But he's, you know, he's back on the title. He's created new characters, and it just feels like it's stuck in early 80s vibe. Yeah. So if you like that kind of stuff.
Well, you sure sold it.
And you've been following it since the beginning. But I feel like we're being asked to jump into the middle of things because of the crossover event. Yeah. And there's no attempt to get new readers.
Actually, it kind of feels awkward. You know, the awkward, like you've been invited to a friend's house for dinner. And all of a sudden, there's this fight going on that's about something you don't know what it's about,
right?
But you're still stuck at sitting at the table waiting for this dinner to be over.
Yeah, because when they get back home, everybody's free, including Looker, and they're just fighting about whatever. It's just been waiting to bicker about every single thing. Oh, you tried to kill Looker. Well, screw you. She was betraying us, and she was a vampire. I feel like Halo did the right thing. Well, you're too cautious. Well, you're too rash. I love Halo. No, I love Halo. No, I love Halo. And Halo goes, I hate everybody. And so they all split up into different teams. And it's like even the best friends are sort of bickering. It's like, stop being so condescending to me. And it's like, well, you're just a big bear, so you're dumb. It just feels like...
Yeah.
This team was just waiting to split up, and all the arguments at the same time, and then, you know, the crash. It reminded me that we haven't seen that white time wave in a long time at the end of a comic, you know, which was sort of a like eating up the letters page and all of that. We haven't seen that in a while. Mm-hmm. Just maybe a quirk of the order we're looking at them in. Some people didn't get the memo, or it just didn't fit the way. The story was just sort of continuing, and there wouldn't be very many changes to the timeline affecting them. Just this crisis point changes things, but it's not really Zero Hour's doing.
Yeah, actually, every issue we read for today's podcast, I just figured that it was because these things are going to continue on. I can say it's very loosely connected to Zero Hour, even if they have the Zero Hour logo on there.
If you don't know about Zero Hour, you'd wonder why these time anomalies just show up to resolve things.
Yeah, I guess.
It's totally unlike any other time anomalies that we've seen, but at the same time, every comic has sort of done its own take on the time anomaly. So sometimes it's a portal, mm-hmm. sometimes it's somebody from another continuity, sometimes it's a what if, sometimes, you know, there's no consistency. They just said time is out of whack, have fun with it. And in the case of Mike Barr or Tom Pyre for Legion, they decided, well, I really need to set up the next phase of this. I need to set up the Zero issue, basically. Mm-hmm. It's less about changing the history of it than changing the status quo locally, what's happening in the moment. Some hard reads this month, I gotta say.
Yeah, it'll pick up. It'll pick up. Don't worry. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. There's a lot of comics to read.
That's true. So. We'll take another break with... a completely different opinion on Outsiders. We're going to play the Outcasters promo. And then we come back, Letters Lost in Time.
Letters Lost in Time.
The Justice League wouldn't help him, so Batman formed a new team. These people of power are all looking for something, be it their past, or a purpose, or simply somewhere to fit in. These are the heroes for a troubled age. They are the Outsiders.
We are the Outsiders. Oh, we are the Outsiders.
Covering Mike W. Barr's 1983 series from the very beginning, as they face villains no other team can, like Agent Orange, the Force of July, and the Nuclear Family. Puns. This is The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast. Look for us with The Huntress podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or listen at our website, thehuntresspodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter at BatOutcasters. We are The Outcasters, because to live outside the law, you must be honest.
We are the Outcasters!
Letters Lost in Time!
Letters Lost in
Excerpts
Time!
Excerpts from your comments on our coverage of Zero Hour number 2. That was the JSA hangover issue.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Franklin says, you guys are right. This issue treats the JSA worse than the last. And who thought that was even possible? I'm not sure any comic has left the editorial puppet strings so visible on the page. I really kind of want to draw them now. Now that he said this. And he goes on, he says, Alan and Jay's out-of-character exit is almost laughably Poochie-like. If this were a TV show, body doubles would only be filmed from the back since the real actor had already moved on. True. Ange says, when you and Bass said you were doing this podcast, I said to myself, I wonder why I don't revisit Zero Hour more. Maybe this podcast will help me appreciate it more. Then I remember it was issues like this. Yes. David S. Gutierrez is a crisis in time, and they just hang it up. These guys punch Nazis. What a waste.
That's a very good point.
How about Diablo Frank, of course, went timestamp by timestamp. But here are some highlights. But it's worth reading the whole thing because it's very humorous. He says, why wouldn't Extant just A, kill all the JSA, and or B, leave them just floating in Vanishing Point indefinitely? At least give us the basic friggin' courtesy of a hubristic rationale like, go warn your fellow interlopers not to waste their lives intervening with my plans, or they'll share your fate. He's right. It doesn't make sense. Why would you let them go? To go out and explain the plot to other heroes that can then try to stop you. He had them where he wanted them.
Really?
He continues. He says, I tossed through the last days of the Justice Society of America years before this issue and appreciated the respect afforded the old-timers in their first retirement. This feels like they're being punished for having the gall to come out of that retirement. Like they're being beaten for wandering away from the home. That said, I didn't have a problem then or now with Alan and Jay's reaction. After decades of hard-won victories over the forces of evil, watching all your friends fall so swiftly would steal the resolve of most anyone. Crisis are a young man's game anyway. Crises. But the JSA had to get cacked over a handful of pages because we needed three panels of Primal Force setup that didn't even accurately set up Primal Force. And they killed the first black guy to get a monologue, which is not a great look. He's talking about Dr. Mist. In the Crisis deep cut category of comments, Frank also gives us, not Wave Rider, said no one, not even the guy who mourns for Panther. Wave Rider is the coal of pariahs. If you know your Crisis, you got that joke. Deluded Outsiders fan Tim Price says, that Nightwing moment was another example where the writing and dialogue didn't hit the mark. Donna could have said, we should do what Nightwing says because he has the best instincts or the most experience or anything for great decision making. But zeroing in on tactics, it's awkward sounding and makes the moment fall flat. Brian J. Raygate says, I am really enjoying your coverage of Zero Hour. When I started my own podcast 6 years ago, the first thing I reviewed was Zero Hour, as it was the event that made me a regular month-to-month reader of comics. I understand the ill will that fans feel about this particular issue. However, I also feel bad that Dan Jurgens tends to receive the brunt of the angry responses from the fandom. From my understanding, Mr. Jurgens advocated for a separate Earth for the JSA, one where they could live out their days in a perpetually 1950s environment. I wonder if the bizarrely depicted routing of the JSA reflects Mr. Jurgens' sense of frustration and forced resignation. So this is an interesting historical point.
Hmm.
If, you know, wanted to do something with the story and was told, no, you got to kill him. We don't do separate Earths. Too bad. And he would have just gone, well, fine. And then just, you want it this way? Let it be this way. And
this blood is on your hands.
Yeah, obviously, when we're going to read the book, your fight with the editors doesn't show on the page. So you can't really do that kind of stuff and not have it fall back on you. That's why you always do your best.
You do your best.
Martin Gray says, I also hated the members of the Justice Society quitting. It was beyond out of character and it was ridiculous that the modern heroes would accept it. Not even a pep talk? I know mind control is a terrible cliche, but a big, awesome mind control cloud descending retroactively to explain all this would have been fine. Dan Jurgens is active on Twitter and friendly. Why not ask him onto the final show to talk about some of this stuff with a big dollop of praise for the bits you enjoy? Well, Martin, I think that ship has sailed. I think we've been so critical of Zero Hour to date that I wouldn't feel good about inviting someone who worked on it
yeah.
on the show, even if that were my thing, which it isn't. I'm very phone shy.
Yeah, that end, you know, I have this thing with talking to creators long time after the thing has been created. Because memory is a weird thing. And if we talk to an author or whatever, 15, 20 years after something has been written, the memories of that time are somewhat displaced, reconfigured. And we always take in the good or remember the bad, but it's never a real...
No, I agree with you. I completely agree with you because we're talking about like 25 years ago, more.
This whole thing is now in his past. I mean, he could talk about it, but, you know, give us like highlights and stuff like that. We couldn't have like real discussions about what was
because
going on.
We've just read it. And for him, that would have been
yeah.
something he did for hire 25 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't even think that would be fun. I'd much rather talk with someone about something he's creating now and how that is affecting his life and where his head is and everything.
And very often that's what they want to talk about. So, in the past when I've done some of these things, you know, in real life, podcasting not being real, but, very little in podcasting, but in real life as well, as, you know, we both worked in radio.
In radio, yeah.
Where the passion is the thing they're doing now. And that's what they want to talk about.
Yeah.
And if you try to bring it back to the former glories and their greatest hits, they still really want to bring it back to what they're doing now and keep it on message, basically, because they're selling whatever they're doing now. I'm not saying it's like cynical. I'm saying that's where they're invested in the moment. So
yeah. Exactly.
It's hard to talk about like the old days, and I listen to a lot of like commentary tracks and that kind of stuff for old things. You usually have like a dude like me sitting there and, you know, reminding them of trivia that they've forgotten and their memories are very, very vague. But
yeah.
For me, when choosing like an interview subject, and again, this is more real life than it is podcast because I've done very little of that on the show and for good reason. If I didn't like something or if I have like reservations about something, I don't really want that person on my show because then I will have to be faking enjoyment where there isn't enjoyment. I don't want to invite someone on a show and then be antagonistic to them. That's not that's not my style. And that's not what they would sign up for. That's not cool.
No, that wouldn't be
so fun. You want to talk to them about something you liked. In this case, I think 0 Hour, the series itself, I think the event has things going for it. But the series itself, we've been very, very critical of it. I personally don't want one of the creators on the show to discuss it. And what? They're never going to check out what we said before? No.
Yeah.
I'm not getting to that. And then there's one last comment. Ward Hill Terry says, how can you read this stuff? You maritime guys are tough.
Well, most of the time, it's very enjoyable.
Here, we covered The Outsiders, and I thought it was a grind. But covering it was not a grind. Reading it was a grind. But I fell into my old patterns of making fun of it. Mike Barr also not invited for an interview on the show. It's just not going to happen.
But, I mean, comics, it's like pizza. I mean, bad pizza is better than no pizza. And we just like comics. So bad comics are better than no comics.
There's also a lot of discussion still on Steel the Movie in the comments. And so if you're interested, check out fireandwaterpodcast.com.
And you should check out Steel the Movie because, you know, it's better than we thought.
And on that note, we have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network has a Patreon page. If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on that zero list. There is a level where you get, you can sponsor a specific show. If you get on the zero list at patreon.com/fwpodcast, you can be saved from the time wave just like these fine folks. Jim Ball has been saved from Maltus and will not go to Oa with the Guardians of the Universe. David Capoon has been saved from contemporary Central City just as a meta-human storm was about to hit. And Michael Bailey, 1 million, has been saved from the 853rd century. A reminder that you can leave us comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow Fire and Water's Facebook page or on Twitter. The account is FWPodcast. You can also now find the podcast on Spotify. Just search for 0 Hour Strikes.
Next time on 0 Hour Strikes, Guy Gardner Warrior number 24, and Green Arrow number 90.